The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
Now, our next guest is going to talk to us about his relationship with Britney Spears and other famous Hollywood people, because he's written the book From Hollywood to Hollywood, My Life as an International Libel Lawyer to the Rich and Famous. Paul Tweed, thank you. And of course, the first Hollywood has only one L in it.
That's correct as well. Hollywood County Down as opposed to Hollywood, California.
Okay, but you've ended up acting on behalf. Well, I suppose Britney Spears isn't really a Hollywood figure, given she's more music, but you have acted for various movie stars, Harrison Ford, Ashton Kutcher. How does a Hollywood County Down lawyer who still lives there end up acting for all of these people?
Well, my libel law career began in Hollywood County Down, Hollywood with one L, when two senior lawyers were accused of fighting over the last chocolate eclair in a Hollywood cake shop. And this is back in 1986. And at the time, the Sunday World published the story. It was given to them, we learned later, by a disaffected lawyer who had a bit of a grudge against one of the senior lawyers. And anyway, at that level of the profession, you've got to make sure you've got credibility and your integrity is intact and that people won't make fun of you in any way. So Bob McCartney, who was one of the top civil lawyers of his day, along with Des Bowles, top criminal lawyer, they sued Sunday World. Made the mistake, their lawyers made the mistake of goading the men. The case ended up in the High Court in Belfast before a Belfast jury of seven individuals who heard all the evidence, and in particular McCartney's evidence. McCartney came from a large Shankill Road family and he sort of could relate to the jurors very well, and they awarded him and Des Bowles £50,000 each. A lot of money in 1986, a lot of money now.
It's great. I'm a former newspaper editor, so I would have received lots of libel letters over the years, both in my job as an editor and also as a reporter, and always have a mind in this. And sometimes I look at some of the complaints that are made, almost been frivolous, I would have thought, and also having the so-called Streisand effect, that something that was noted by very few people actually becomes magnified by the fact that people decide that they want to go to court to have their good name restored, when in reality, there was nothing of any significance done to their name.
It's difficult, you know, it's very difficult to generalise. I mean, in many of these cases, particularly the Hollywood stars, they're not looking for money. They want to get the record set straight as soon as possible. Because now, if your reputation is damaged when you're living at that level in that world, your brand suffers as well. And it can be catastrophic for a brand. So there is a strong financial motivation not to collect money from the publisher, but to get the name corrected and reputation put back where it was before the allegation was made. It's very difficult. It's interesting you say there, Matt, about the Barbra Streisand effect. And that's obviously a big worry. I mean, 95% of my work nowadays is against the online companies, big tech companies, the platforms. And the difficulty is that, you know, when something is published back in the day, when it was maybe the Indo publishing or something, you know, it was a relatively limited audience. And it was primarily limited to Ireland, with a few additional bits of dissemination elsewhere. Nowadays, if something's published on Instagram or Twitter or Facebook, it goes round the world in seconds, in a massive scale, a scale that, you know, we would never have envisaged back in the 1990s. So as a result, the Barbra Streisand effect takes a place the minute the allegation is published. That is the big problem that these people face. And to be fair to them, the remedies open to them are relatively limited.
Go back to Britney Spears, because I think this is an illustrative point. Tell us how you ended up representing her.
Well, I'd sort of built up a bit of a reputation during the 1990s. Mainly, it was a very little competition. And, you know, we'd acted for the Barney Eastwood, Barry McGuigan case, which led to a record damages award for Ireland. And then that moved on to, you know, Liam Neeson and most of the Hollywood actors that had Irish backgrounds, so they'd come to me for different cases and that we did quite well in. So Britney Spears came in 2006. Internet just beginning to take off big time. No social media as yet. We're on a situation where the National Enquirer, who were able to publish with impunity in the United States due to First Amendment protections out there.
You can say almost anything about anyone.
Absolutely. And virtually impossible if you have any public standing at all. Virtually impossible to successfully sue for libel. So what happened was they decided to open a European edition, just basically about a month or two before they published this front page splash about Britney Spears saying her marriage to Kevin Federline had broken down. And all we wanted was get the record set straight. And so we took action against them from Ireland, against their European edition. And after a bit of to-ing and fro-ing, they suddenly realised that, whoops, we've exposed ourselves to Irish and European privacy data protection and defamation laws. And we managed to get the case resolved very quickly. Full-out apology and retraction, that's all she was looking for, and that's what we got.
Now, but hold on, the marriage did break up. It was gone within a couple of months.
Yeah, but at that time, it was, so far as she was concerned, it was strong. And this media coverage did not help in keeping the marriage together. But that's another issue, Matt. But
I think it's a very important issue because how can you be sure that your clients are necessarily telling you the truth?
I have to be sure. I put it this way, that's my judgment. Every client that comes in to me, I've got to determine the veracity of what they're telling me and whether they've got a case. She was absolutely satisfied that her marriage was intact at that time. Nobody knows afterwards what is going to happen. You don't know what's going to happen in your life in 3 months' time. You don't know what people are going to do to you in 3 months' time. I live in the moment and I've got to make a credible decision as to whether there's a fair and proper claim. But the importance of the Britney case was I was able to pump that apology back down the internet from where it came via the National Enquirer site, right down from Ireland, across Europe, across the Far East, Australia, and into LA where I wanted it to go. Now, that achieved the purpose that I wanted. And I do not think anyone can begrudge anybody, whether you're a taxi driver at Dublin Airport or whether you're an international celebrity, the right to have the truth out there. But we're getting to a stage nowadays where the truth is like water. Whenever it evaporates, it's very, very hard to get it back. And nowadays, it's very difficult to find it.
But Paul, I know we're coming from opposing sides here because I'm going to argue with you that a lot of the time people who use lawyers like yourself to defend their good name, to say that things are untrue and that they want the record straightened, are lying. That actually the story is true. The problem for the publisher is actually proving it beyond all reasonable doubt. Well, and often there are individuals who have lots of money who actually take on media organisations who are believed to have lots of money but actually don't have as much money as these individuals, and it becomes a battle of who's got the deepest wallet.
Well, I'm fortunate, and maybe I'm just a bit of an angel in all this. I haven't had this experience, Matt. I'm totally opposed to what is known as slap cases. These are strategic cases brought by wealthy people to silence criticism. I am absolutely, utterly opposed to it. I act for newspapers. I act for publishers. I keep having to swap my hat. I act for more journalists probably than anyone else in this island.
Sorry, declaration of interest. Your firm did do the legal reading of one of my books. I can't remember which but I know you did.
Such a prolific writer as well. And you've managed to survive. You haven't been successfully sued by anyone. So, you've got to remember there is much more equality of arms than you're maybe suggesting, Matt. And I know we've got to keep, you've got your hat on and I've got my different coloured hat on here today. But, most newspapers either have insurance. Most of them have very good lawyers acting for them as well. And most of them can spot a fraud if it comes there. I would be ashamed of myself if I took on a case where somebody was adopting a slap stance. I think it's appalling. I don't care what legislation is brought in. I would encourage it to discourage that type of litigation. My clients come in and, I've got somebody like Louis Walsh, who was almost suicidal as a result of a totally fabricated story that ruined 2 years of his life. Now, surely he had the right to sue.
Absolutely.
Particularly where he was goaded. Early on, he did not. We tried. Every case I have, I try to get settled before I issue proceedings.
And I don't want to rehash the utterly unfair, malicious, wrong story about Louis Walsh. But yes, I do remember, and I've spoken about Louis that subsequently, how upset he was. And I think any good journalist will not actually defend material been put into newspapers that has been invented or is known to be wrong, that there is a responsibility for journalists to do everything possible to ensure what they're publishing is correct. So I can understand where you're coming from in that one. But I am interested in you saying that for most of these people, it's not about the money, because do you remember Albert Reynolds took a famous case against the Sunday Times and he won 1 pence in damages and had to pay all his own legal costs?
Yep.
That struck me very much at the time as a Pyrrhic victory.
Yeah, and basically he was punished for bringing the case. I don't think it's fair necessarily to focus on that one, because that case actually acts as a deterrent to plaintiffs, as perhaps it should do. This is not, it's not a walk in the park. I regard it as an absolute failure if any of my clients have to enter the witness box. I try to get options. I try to get the cases mediated, agreed. So, and most of the cases I've got very good relationships with newspaper editors, with in-house lawyers, and with journalists, as I say, many of whom I act for. And sometimes I do have to act against them as well, but that's the way my gig was. You know, we try to get, and we get most of them settled and resolved. There are some cases that may fall into the category that you described before. I wouldn't like to think that I certainly was not nowhere near them, and I say I'm not aware of them actually taking place.
We try to take great care on this programme not to defame anyone for a couple of reasons. One, the financial penalties that could befall the station, but also, again, because we believe that we shouldn't be defaming people. We should be accurate in what we say. And yet, on social media now, it seems like anything can be said, and the publishers there take no responsibility for what people actually say. You already have alluded to this. This is something that you're now taking a bit of a crusade out against.
Absolutely. Well, I have been taking it. I mean, I've never understood how they can, with a straight face, argue that we're not a publisher. You know, whether it's Facebook, whether it's X or whatever, Instagram, you know, they are communicating material which they have control over. And yet they say, no, we're not like mainstream media. Even though we're taking their mainstream media's advertising, even though we're getting all the good bits, we're not responsible. We're not accountable. Now, I don't accept that, but that is the stance that they've taken, and they quote the Ecom Directive. In the United States, they cite Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act. Now, here's the rub. We are now, in my whatever years I've got left still in practice, if I'm still doing it, I think the defendants I'm going to be facing most are going to be the generative AI platforms and bots. Now, generative AI is very interesting. But the big question is, I don't think they can argue that we do not create content. Generative AI creates new content, and that in turn, and there are a number of leading law professors agree with me, certainly in the United States, it takes them outside the protection of Section 230, and I will be arguing it takes them well outside the protection of the Ecom Directive. So we're going to see a different world here. So maybe the playing field may be levelling, accidentally or otherwise, as a result of this in terms of generative AI, because that's going to be the main problem for us.
It's very interesting you bring that up, because I'm in agreement with you, because I'm researching another book at present. And sometimes if you're looking for material, you might do a Google search to bring you to previous material that's been published. And then you can look at that material and you can assess it and you can see whether you want to use it or follow up on it. So I tested out ChatGPT. And what I got back was information that was wrong and that I knew was wrong. And when I further pressed ChatGPT, and it's quite bizarre, you end up having this online conversation almost as if with a real person, coming back and admitting to me that it hadn't actually gone far enough in looking for the information. And then essentially what it is, it's a summary of what it scrapes off the web. So by the fact is that when it's itself putting together a summary of what it finds, then surely that's the publisher and it has to be responsible for what wrong information it gives to you.
Absolutely. You've articulated that very well indeed. And as I say, that is the problem we've got. I mean, another publisher in Ireland put a request into one of the other AI platforms asking, you know, what senior legal figures in Ireland have been accused of sexual misconduct? Names of judges, lawyers, barristers came up. And whenever this was challenged by my publishing client, they said, oh, they quoted articles in the Irish Times, the Irish Independent, and in my client on the same date. No such articles existed. It was absolutely, totally fabricated, erroneous material. Now, that, can you imagine? And it took a matter of weeks before the AI bot corrected the mistake. I had another situation. A client of mine in the Middle East is developing AI, and he showed me a screen, a split screen of two female newsreaders, identical. And he said, which one's a human and which one's AI? I had three guesses. I got it wrong all three times, making me believe that the AI model can be made to look more human than the actual human. Where are we going to, you know, where are we going to be? I would have to do other checks now to make sure it's Matt Cooper in front of me, maybe this time next year, whenever all this comes into play.
You mean it's not my hologram? From Hollywood to Hollywood. Paul Tweed, thank you for joining us. I suspect, though, the probably client confidentiality stopped you putting some juicy stories in here, did it?
Yeah, unfortunately, yes.
Paul Tweed, thank you for joining us. We'll be back after this.
Thanks, Matt. The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Today.